All right, to Titus chapter 1 now. Remember that we have focused especially on the training that the gospel of the grace of God provides for the Lord's people, according to Titus 2 and verses 12 and 13. Now, one of the aspects of this that receives prominence in this book, both by placement and by theme, is the leadership that a congregation of the Lord's people would require in a place like Crete. Verse 5 of chapter 1, everybody notice this for us for a second. Coeta, do you mind to read for us Titus 1, verse 5, just to set the stage for our thinking this morning?
The reason I left you in Crete was that you might straighten out what was left unfinished and appoint elders in every town as I directed you.
All right. Now, notice the idea of appointing elders in every town. We understand that to mean every town where there's a congregation of the Lord's people, of course. And it's interesting that this process receives a different approach here in Titus than it does, say, in Acts 14, along toward the end of Acts 14, when Paul's first missionary journey, where he travels in Asia Minor to a certain point, establishing groups of believers or congregations in these places, and then he retraces that journey, appointing elders in every church as he goes on his way. Now, how do you account for the development of these spiritually mature and strong leaders in so short a period of time as that? One possibility is that there were synagogues in those towns where some of these believers came from, and that these people had a background in the Old Testament scriptures and in godly living and in what faith meant, so that they have the right footing or the right foundation for this kind of life and this kind of work. Another possibility is that as an apostle, Paul is able, through the laying on of his hands, to impart the spiritual gift of leadership or of teaching to these men, so that they're able to function in these ways. Of course, us not being apostles, we're not able to develop leaders in that manner, and neither was Titus. On the island of Crete, where according to verse 12, the moral and spiritual and social atmosphere of the culture is not conducive to mature godly character, Paul, in his brief time, or we think brief, we don't know how long it was, that he and Titus were able to work on the island of Crete, has not been able at this point to prepare and to put in place leadership in the congregations that have been established. So he knows that there are things that remain to be put in order, or as the version Coeta read for us there said, things that need to be straightened out. And that's a practical way of translating the idea, I think. Now, the task that Titus is given is going to be a process that involves teaching and training and preparation and also some authority from the apostles of Christ. And one of the reasons Paul writes the things he's about to say to Titus is so that the people Titus teaches will know that he has the authority of the apostle behind him for these purposes. Now, for our class today, we're going to need to give some thought to what verse 5 introduces to us for the leadership of the New Testament church. The church, if it's trained by grace, has this kind of function within it. And it's a good time maybe for us to look at a little bit broader way at the good work that Paul has in mind here. I want for us to do it in this way. You'll notice that the term he uses in Titus 1 and verse 5 is elders. And I want to call your attention to a basic truth that a lot of you already know. This same group of men will be spoken of by two other terms in the New Testament, and they are these terms. The same group of men will be referred to in these ways, and a lot of you will have heard maybe some of these terms. They bear some relevance, so I want to mention them here. The term for, excuse me, I'm writing my words in the wrong spot here. The term for elders, you will have heard put into English in this way before. This will be the original term for this one. This will be for this one. And then this will be for this one. And those Greek terms mean nothing to us, except that in a couple of cases they have been put into English words. And you will notice that as the church turns into a denominated type of circumstance, the nature of the organization or the leadership struggle adapted will often define what the group turns out to be. And there is a New Testament picture that we want to be aware of, and maybe the first place for us to start is to show the places where these same three words are applied to the same group of men. And two places in particular will help us, I think. Acts chapter 20 will be the first. Now take a look, everybody, at Acts 20. And what I'm trying to remind us of is that Paul's mention of what he wants Titus to do on the island of Crete is consistent with the organization of the church that we find in the rest of the New Testament. And notice in Acts 20 at verse 17 to start with. And point out, now, Paul is on his way from Macedonia and Achaia to Judea and Jerusalem. And along the way, he stops to meet with men he has worked with from Central Asia Minor. And for his convenience, he calls them to him. Look at Acts 20, verse 17. John, what term do you find used there of the men that he meets with? Read for us. Acts 20, 17.
Now from
Miletus,
he sent to Ephesus and called the elders of the church to come to him.
All right. Now, a lot of you will remember from your study of Acts that he worked with the church in Ephesus for an extended period of up to 3 years. And these men, he would have been his co-workers. Now, what term does he use for them there? Well, it's elders, and it's this term, presbyter, in the original language. Now, skip down with me to verse 28. After Paul has reviewed his work with them, he gives them a charge. And there are two of these terms used in verse 28 that are important. Randy, let me ask you to read them. And they get translated in different ways, but they're the two words that we have here. Randy?
Pay careful attention to yourselves and to all the flock, in which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers.
All right, now, everybody sees that the same group of men, elders, he says the Holy Spirit has made you overseers of God's flock. Everybody see that? Go ahead, Randy.
To care for the church of God, which he ordained with his own blood.
All right, now, to care for the church of God, how else is that translated in the other versions? To shepherd, what else? Shepherd, sometimes it will be translated tend, like a shepherd tends a flock, or feed, like a shepherd feeds the flock. This word is this one here. This term here, a form of it, the same word for shepherds is applied for care or tend or feed the flock. And who is to do this? Well, the men who are overseeing it as its elders. Everybody sees now these same three terms are applied to the same group of men. There's all, for any congregation we read of in the New Testament, there's always more than one of these men. And they all they function in these ways. Turn to 1 Peter 5 for a second. And look at verses 1 and 2. We could go a little farther, but this will suit our time maybe. 1 Peter 5 verses 1 and 2. Okay. Let's see. Michelle, read for us if you would.
The elders who are among you, I exhort.
All right, everybody notice what she just read as our first word here. Everybody sees that? 1 Peter 5:1, the elders. Okay. Go ahead, Michelle.
I, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God.
All right, everybody sees that word, right? Shepherd, tend, feed the flock of God, care for it. That is among you. Go ahead.
Serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly.
All right. Serving as overseers, then. And you see the idea again, the same three terms apply to the same three, or to the same single group of men. Everybody notices that. Now, this will maybe get a little more clear to us if I attach the terms that have been used in some of the older English translations to this, and you'll see more about why there are sometimes controversies about this when people don't realize we're talking about the same men. This word here, you can see how it gets used in English by that word there, presbyters. This word gets translated bishops. This word gets translated pastors in some of the English versions. Now, this is a case where the King James translates it bishops more to fit the powers that were at the time, and because it was in keeping with the New Testament ideal, and possibly this other term as well. You can see, when you think about this, how the three terms relate to each other, something that will be important. The term elders refers to of course, how would you think it would be used? Just from the use of the word elders, what does that suggest to you? 19 to 21 year old men, or an older individual, someone, and it doesn't give us an age, but someone who is mature, a man of experience, someone who is respected by having matured and gained the wisdom that comes only of living, a man of spiritual maturity and spiritual experience. All right, what about overseers? Michelle, if you still have 1 Peter 5 there, you might read. Notice that it said there to not do this under compulsion, but willingly, and not for shameful gain, that would be personal gain, but eagerly. And then verse 3, you might go ahead and read that as well.
Nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flocks.
All right. And this is the idea of not domineering and so forth. And then shepherding, what does that suggest to you? What?
To care.
All right, the caring, the attentiveness, the gentleness, the feeding, the providing for, the guarding, like a shepherd would guard from a flock, from predators and so forth. That would be involved in this. Now, let me suggest one step farther here. A way that I use to try to think about church leadership in a way that will help. This word would say who they are. These men are mature men of experience and living for the Lord who can function as examples in that way. Overseers, I believe, refers to what they do. They oversee what belongs to someone else. And Titus, and Paul is speaking to Titus, uses the word stewards even to show they are taking care of what belongs to someone else. And then I think it's healthy to say that this word refers to how they do it. How they do the work that's given to them. By acting like shepherds act toward the flock and not acting like a board of directors or bosses or some other model of organizational leadership that we might find in the ordinary world. Does that make sense to you? Do you kind of see what we're talking about? Okay. Now, in looking at this, we might observe some dangers or some misunderstandings that have come along over the years. One of them would be, for example, a model of church leadership in which a group might have a bishop and not a group of bishops overseeing a congregation. A bishop who might be the organizational head over a whole area, for example. That's not the biblical model. Or where a church may have a pastor where he is would generally be the person who would do the preaching and who would be seen as the head or the overseer of the whole group. Or where a church may have elders or presbyters or so forth who are not the sorts of individuals that we're about to read or to think about from what Titus says here. Try to put these things together in your mind, and you will notice that this task is a role. It is not, I mean, the word office is only used in an accommodative sense in 1 Timothy 3. This role is a function or a work or a service to the flock of God. The task of functioning in this way is not an honorary position. I mean, If anything, it often involves loneliness and stress and puzzlement over how in the world do we handle situations that are tense in people's lives. Sometimes that's involved. It's certainly not an honorary position. It is a function or a role or a service. It is a teaching role, much more, I think, than we commonly understand it today. And Titus, along with 1 Timothy, and if you read what Paul says in Acts 20 to the elders of the church in Ephesus, this becomes clear. The teaching responsibility, whether it is to be conceived of in a group setting or in a private setting, helping someone see what is what the Lord wants, and helping someone to be fashioned by what the Lord has said. That's the part of this. And then it is a function of spiritual / moral influence. In other words, the authority that this role carries with it is not the same kind of authority you would find in a military brigade or in a political office where an individual might say, "Look, you elected me. Now I'm representing you, and I'll do what I think is best in that way." Because elders, you see, are already obligated to their chief shepherd. It is his flock, and elders know that they serve within that flock. Now, that outline of it is the best explanation that I can offer for why the kinds of descriptions of these men, what these men will need to be, are offered in this next paragraph. The biggest difficulty that I've ever seen congregations have not been over individual descriptions of these men, or what we sometimes hear referred to as qualifications. The biggest challenges I've seen congregations have is in remembering what in the world it is we're talking about to start with. That's the what is the work? What is the task? And I think that's where we start. Now, anyone have a question or comment or an argument with us so far over this, Tom?
My very first thought I had when you first started, you started talking about how in such an early stage they got to these points with these people. And I thought about my master's degree is in organizational leadership. And in that process of earning that master's degree, we were taught that leaders are those in position of influence that can lead others toward a common goal. In other words, it's not authoritative, and the purpose is not their own self goal, but it is a common goal that because of their spiritual or moral influence, they have the ability to lead others.
Yeah. That's always true. I mean, your point about organizational leadership sort of says if something's true in one area, it's true in whatever setting it is. One of the difficulties I have in talking about this is even referring to it just as leaders. Because in a very real way, I mean, the Bible, it may use that term for these men in Hebrews 13 and verse 7, although I'm not sure it's talking about elders there, and I told my class that Wednesday night. I think in Hebrews 13 and verse 17, it may suggest that leaders, that elders, overseers, shepherds, are in a practical sense rulers or leaders in a congregation, but the main thought that I see is that these men are as shepherds. They are like the chief shepherd. How did Jesus say he was among us? Luke 22, I am among you as one who serves. He said the Gentiles, their great ones, are the ones who have control over. What verse in Luke 22 is that? 27, 37, somewhere along in there. I don't have my Bible in front of me here on that passage, but that is the idea that's here. These men do end up having the influence by the nature of their task, and you think of it that way. Anyone else with a comment or question or observation about this? Todd?
Well, I might bounce here a little bit, but from last week, you started off, are there qualities that you see or that you think about for what defines or describes somebody that is a teacher to you?
Mm-hmm.
And as you're talking about these men here, these leadership roles here, but teachers and inspirers, if you will, so that they will help you to gain an understanding or a devotion. One of the passages that means it and express them out to me is in Titus 3:9, where it says, "But avoid foolish controversies and arguments and quarrels." And, you know, I think that a quality that I try to put that into my own life perspective, and I try to apply this maybe in different ways and meanings and place that way, but then trying to make it to where I'm not the controversial part that goes out and then stirs up the nest. I'm trying to be calm and trying to be still in my spirit, you know, so that there again, I can be a faithful servant, trying to be somebody that is trying to make a connection or a place with somebody to help them learn or know a little bit more or better, but trying not to be controversial myself.
Yeah. That will be when these men are going to have to deal with people who, it will say in verse 9 and following here, who are unruly. If they themselves are lovers of that kind of thing, it's going to be awfully hard to have the desired impact on that. One of the reasons that I'm mentioning that I almost hesitate to use the word leadership in this way is because I know from quite a few years now of involvement with the church that not all of the leadership that a congregation requires and thrives on can or should come from the elders. Now, the elders are men who bear responsibility. They, Hebrews 13 and verse 17 says they watch. Remember what it says they watch for? Souls, that's right. What can you think of a more weighty responsibility than that? They watch for souls as men who will give account. You see, this is God's flock, and they watch for souls. And it is not real life to think that all of the leadership that a congregation, a body requires to thrive and to work and to interact and to reach out into the community and all of that can come just from them. I've noticed over the years leadership in important ways coming from sometimes teenage young people, certainly from godly ladies in a congregation, very often from mature men who are not and will not become elders at any point in their lives. Some of them, I've seen fellas who were not married. I remember one fella who had a big impact on my life, who he did not think it was expedient for him to be appointed to the eldership because he couldn't hear well. He couldn't hear the bells ring and so forth, that type of thing. But I was with him one time. He wanted me to go see a fellow in the community who was an unfaithful member of the church. And I went out there with him, and Brother Horn, everybody respected him. And we went in and sat down in a very, very humble living room. And Brother Horn placed his arm, his hand on Ray's, if I could tell you the guy's last name, I still remember it, but I won't, on Ray's shoulder. And he said, "Now, Ray, we know that none of us are going to live forever in this life. And we need to be right with the Lord." And I saw what a huge impact that had in that man's life. And I've seen that. All of you have seen that kind of leadership. The people who have influence and who can help get things done and so forth. Elders depend on those. And a lot of times those people are deacons, maybe. You see what I'm getting at in that way. So that's part of this. Anything else? I've gone one verse at a time with some of this, but this is an important part of this study. Chatty, at you first.
We may not have to account to God for somebody else's soul, but shouldn't we all be watching out for each other?
Oh, yes. And in fact, the Scripture teaches that, doesn't it? So, in other words, these things are not exclusively things of elders, but they're packaged up in one situation, and especially this idea that elders will require. Now, Linda?
And maybe this is one thing that they need to work on passing on to the next generations, too. You know, like you said, the gentleman went with you.
Yes.
So if
now he took me with him.
A younger person goes with someone who has handled those things before, they learn, they see some ways that are better to handle it than others.
It's a good point, and an added thing about what you're saying is the need for that kind of mentoring to provide for the future of the church overall. That is often certainly the more stabilizing influence than preaching is that kind of work, okay?
And I think that's one of the big issues, and I go back to my point. I think as a society, we have defined leadership as a position of authority.
Yeah.
Instead of a position of servanthood.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key to developing leaders, is developing servants.
And being aware that servants then accept responsibility from their Lord, and then are responsible to Him in that way. One of the problems is that we preachers teach that we are not pastors, and then act like pastors. Practically, that's one of the problems. Another problem, of course, is that bishop is a word that gets loaded with baggage and is easily misunderstood. This is the watching over part of this word. And then that the respect, the moral influence that goes with this is such that, and this is the point of launch for the next study, really, is such that it will take a certain kind of man to do this work. And I suggest that is the way the next paragraph is meant to be understood. We talk about it as qualifications, as if it was a checklist, but you ask yourself, all right, now what kind of a man does it take to do this work? It's not this is not at all a picture in which whether or not a person is qualified is a matter of his moral worthiness and so forth. Let me give you a simple example, and I don't mean this to sound wrong at all. I hope it doesn't. But if you were to take someone in my role as a gospel preacher in a congregation, if I were to get mature enough and so forth, were to be asked to serve in this kind of a way, I don't think there would be anything biblically wrong with that. I think 1 Peter 5, which Michelle read, shows that Peter served in this way. But I doubt that it would be expedient for me to do so, because there's already the danger that I feel in this way. So I wouldn't regard it as being a judgment on my moral worthiness. I certainly have questions about where I stand with some of the things here. But you see what I'm getting at? Paul is not saying that every man who is like what he's talking about is cut out for this work or should be appointed to this, but some are going to need to for the church to be healthy, and that's the idea. Give some thinking. I brought another version here with me so we could look up the meaning of some of the words. I've done this for the last 2 weeks. Read over down through verse 9 now, the description that's here, and refresh your memory as well from 1 Peter 3 and the passage that's described there. I want to ask you, why do you think Paul does not give identical lists in Titus chapter 1 and 1 Timothy chapter 3? Why are they not identical? I want you to think about that, and we'll talk about it next time. Everybody have a great week.